Our meeting will come to order, please. This is Thursday, January 29th. We do not yet have a quorum, but let's get our presenters in place. Members, we'll be holding our questions until the presentation is finished. So if you're afraid you might forget your question, please write it down. Welcome, Ms. Dugan. Please introduce yourself and begin your presentation. Members, you can tell today is our special assessment system day. We will hear from both the department and from Pearson in regard to the online. So welcome again, Ms. Dugan.
Thank you for having me. Jennifer Dugan, Director for Statewide Testing at the Minnesota Department of Education. So just want to make sure that everybody has the same background. So the first few slides I'm going to go over rather quickly. So federal requirements require the state to assess all students annually in math and reading, grades 3 through 8, and then also once in high school. And the requirement also is that those assessments are aligned to the Minnesota academic standards. For science, we're required to assess all students once in elementary grades, once in middle grades, and once in high school. And again, those assessments must be aligned to our academic standards. For English learners, we're required to assess English learners every year in grades kindergarten through 12th grade. So as long as a student is identified as an English learner, they're assessed on this additional assessment to assess their acquisition of the English language. And so that assessment tests acquisition of English in using the subjects of reading, writing, listening, and speaking. And also, these are our federal requirements, but they're also repeated in state statute as well. Specific to Minnesota, we also have requirements to assess students in grade 8 and also in grade 10, and that assessment must in reading, writing, and mathematics must be predictive of performance on a college entrance exam, and it also should include a career exploration element.
Excuse me, Ms. Dugan, but the meeting is officially called to order. A quorum is present. Please continue.
Additionally, based on the performance of students on that grade 8 and grade 10 assessment, a subset of students that are not career and college ready based on that grade 8 and 10 performance, the statute calls for a college placement diagnostic exam. And that's taken after they take that grade 10 test on the previous slide and prior to them taking the college entrance exam in 11th grade. So they have a very large window to determine when it's most appropriate for an individual student to take that. And again, not all students take this assessment. And then also in Minnesota, grade 11 students take the college entrance exam. And that's including the writing component. So what did I just say? This is a graphic representation of all of those things that I just stated. So the red diamonds are indicating that first slide where it's satisfying federal requirements. Also, those red diamonds are indicating where the test scores are used for accountability purposes. And so we'll talk about that in a little bit. Again, the green squares are talking about the assessment for English learners, so only English learners take the green squares. And then the blue circles are the state requirements for the grade 8, grade 10, and grade 11 students for those career and college assessments. Because it doesn't necessarily translate, the proper nouns are listed on this chart. So in 2014-15 school year, the grade 8 and grade 10 test was explore and plan. So grade 8 students took explore this fall, and grade 10 students took plan. So these are the, in rough dates, these are the testing timelines of when the administration takes place. So that access for ELLs, the assessment specific for English learners, is given in late winter. Spring is the MCA and MTAS, and MCA stands for Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, and MTAS stands for Minnesota Test of Academic Skills. A student only takes one or the other. So the MTAS assessment is a test specifically designed for special education students, and it's special education students that are the most severely cognitively challenged. That assessment is administered individually, and so those students, a student would either take MCA or they would take MTAS. A student's not taking both of those assessments. And then we've already talked about the grade 8 and grade 10 students this past fall took Explore and Plan, and then the Compass window opened in January for those students, and then April 28th is the statewide testing date for ACT this spring. So we talked about the administration. Now I'm really focusing on the MCA timeline. So the administration this year is March 9th to May 8th for math and reading, and May 15th for science. And so that's a very large window, and much of that is due to online testing and allowing districts the flexibility in scheduling and making sure that there's sufficient time for them to get the students assessed. So once the students take their assessment, then within an hour for MCA, and this was actually true last year as well, but this year, if once a student completes their test and they click submit, within an hour, those results are available electronically in the district. May 26th to June 12th, districts have the option or the opportunity to finalize their data elements. This does not mean that they are changing test scores. This means that they are making sure that all of the students that needed assessments have a test record. They may be, something new may have come to light after the students submitted their test, and they may need to invalidate. They may need to indicate that the student was absent or had a medical excuse or something like that. So they're really cleaning up the elements of their data, because that matters in the accountability calculations. So all of those special test codes mean something when we get down the line. So it's really important that the districts have that opportunity to clean up their data and make sure that what we're using in the final calculations is accurate and complete. So that happens late May, early June. So once they finish that, then we finalize the results. So June 24th, districts have electronic final results. They have their official final results from the spring test, but not until they have that final opportunity to clean up their data. Part of what is going on during that time as well is we also have score triangulation, and that means that the vendor scores the test, MDE validates that and replicates that, and we also have an independent third-party vendor that replicates and verifies that scoring was correct and complete. And so all of that is going on behind the scenes while districts are finalizing their data elements, and then also while we're aggregating the results. And then August 3rd is when paper reports arrive in districts. So a student takes the test, the results are available much sooner electronically than when that piece of paper arrives that the department provides when that piece of paper arrives in districts. And we're going to talk about reporting elements in just a moment. But just to put it in context for this year, that's what the timelines look like. So we've talked a little bit about accountability. Again, it's utilizing those MCA or MTAS scores, because again, a student is only taking MCA or they're taking MTAS. We've talked about the calculations being verified. And so in early August, districts have their preliminary AYP results. And that is consistent with state statute that requires a 30-day appeals window. So they receive their data in early August, and then they have the appeals window. And then September 1 is our deadline for public release. I don't know that it will. It might be before September 1, but for sure we'll make that September 1 date. And then those accountability calculations are used to identify reward, focus, and priority schools. And what's on the slide is what the department uses the test scores for, but school districts are also using these test scores for teacher evaluations and looking at curricular decisions and those kinds of pieces. So again, that's why we really want to make sure that we've got all of the students coded correctly and all of the tests scored correctly. So it takes some time to make sure that we've got it right before those actions follow. A little bit of additional context. So some more information is going to be provided to districts beginning next year. So in spring of 16, state statute requires us to include off-grade level items, and that is required in current legislation. It is also going to require us, with current federal requirements, it will require us to lengthen the test. So I just wanted to make everybody aware that a consequence of that state legislation is that there will be additional items added to the test in spring of 16 in order to satisfy that state requirement. Also, there's another piece of the statute that requires us to provide an indication of whether or not a student is on track beginning in third grade. And so we've been working on that, and with our advisory committees developing the statistical models that we'll be using to follow through with that, and that information will be provided next year going down to grade 3. So I mentioned advisory committee, so I just wanted to give you some context. The department is not acting alone or in isolation. So just a couple of our committees, we have the Accommodations Advisory Review Panel, and that group is special education directors, special education teachers, advocates, really helping us look at accommodations requests and analyzing every year, do we need to make any adjustments to the accommodations that we're providing annually for the assessments. We also have the next two committees meet primarily jointly. The Assessment Advisory Committee is required in statute, and so many of the topics that we would discuss with them, we would also discuss with the Local Assessment and Accountability Advisory Committee. And so we've got the district assessment coordinators are not listed specifically in the statute for the Assessment Advisory Committee, but the Assessment Advisory Committee has superintendents, teachers, members of the public at large, and so we also have those district assessment coordinators to help us know what's going on in a district, how lend another lens to the teacher perspective of what services we can help out with the districts. The Technical Advisory Committee is an independent advisory committee that is a group of national testing experts that come together and advise us on technical issues. So, for example, developing those statistical models for how we're going to provide information about whether or not a student is on track starting with grade 3. That's our technical advisory committee that's helping us do those pieces. And then we have a technology work group, and that's primarily district technology coordinators. There are some district assessment coordinators on there as well, but that group meets monthly, and we talk with them about technology issues and bounce things back and forth about how we should proceed. So that they're advising us on the technology, specifically focusing on the technology and the administration more geared towards students and their interaction. So these are ongoing groups, and they're groups that meet on a regular basis. There are some groups that have been brought together for a special purpose, and so I just wanted to call those out. I think many of you are aware of the CCRPI group that met in 2009, and there was legislation brought forward as a result of that committee. The Assessment and Accountability Work Group in 2012, that committee brought forward a recommendation as well. So these are special groups that are not recurring committees necessarily. So part of the test reduction advisory group that met, part of the conversation that we were having was we needed information. So what I've covered is what the state administers, the assessments that the state administers. But in order to inform the entire conversation, we submitted a survey to Minnesota districts so we could get a more accurate and complete picture about the assessment, all of the assessments that districts are providing. And so this is a very quick snapshot. We have much more data, but I know that you want to get to many other things today, but just to let you know that we did complete this survey. Approximately 50% of the districts were represented, so that's not a bad showing, considering that it was an additional ask of districts that they were not obligated to provide. And so, again, the last bullet is about 98% of those districts reported giving additional assessments to students in grades 3 through 12, and so we can talk more about that if you want to have a follow-up conversation about what those statistics look like. So we've talked early in the presentation, we talked about reporting, and I know that that's something that parents are very not impressed by, our reporting timelines. And so I just wanted to give you some additional context in talking about reporting before Pearson provides their demonstration of the online reporting system that districts have access to. So MDE provides secure reports to districts, and so this is password protected, and the superintendent is the grantor of access within the district. So it's historical information. It does go down to an individual student level, and so that's why it's password protected and in a different area. Districts can analyze their information and have that historical perspective. The data center, which I think many of you are probably aware of through the MDE data center, that's a public website. We do have a cell size restriction of 10 in an effort to protect personally identifiable information. And so a very small school district may not have the data represented there on the public site that they would have access to in the secure reports. But again, that provides historical information, and they can look at it by student group, they can look at it by achievement level, they can look at it by strand performance. So there's a lot of information there. Those were all provided by MDE. Through the vendor's reporting system, we have two different systems. that function a little bit differently. The on-demand reporting system is where the student scores would be presented within the hour of the student completing the test. So that's the on-demand reporting. Students or schools can roster and provide that access to a teacher, or they can get the information within their district, maybe at a building level or a district level, and provide it to the teacher if they think that's most appropriate. So they can decide how to grant access into the on-demand reporting system. The longitudinal reporting system is where the data gets loaded when the results are finalized, and that system provides tools for them to analyze their data. So again, they can look at trend data, they can look at subgroup performance, they can look at strand performance, and again, it's all password protected, and so those systems do go down to a single student, potentially. So I referenced earlier that we are looking for ways to improve our reporting features. We will have to redesign our student reports for 15-16, and part of that goes to our requirement to provide that trajectory for career and college readiness on the student report, and providing that the student's performance on that off-grade level component. So adding information means something has to go away, and so we're looking to redesign those reports. And part of that will be bringing focus groups together. So very interested in parent feedback, because that's who they're intended for. Those student reports are intended for parents and students. So we're looking for parent feedback, student feedback, and district feedback, because the districts are the ones that are presenting those reports to the district. And so it needs to be information that they can explain and can convey to parents. So that is absolutely going to happen. Other pieces that we are working towards improving, we know that we want to improve our interpretive materials and the systems that go with that. And so that's a lot of jargon that I just said. So what does that mean? We've got benchmark reports that are out there for science, and Pearson's going to show those. But we also want to provide those benchmark reports for math and reading. The districts have given us feedback that those benchmark reports are very valuable for science, and so we know that we want to put the resources to creating those for math and reading, and those are well underway. We produce an interpretive guide, but it is not interactive. It is a static PDF. And it walks through, it's a PDF walking through the components of that student report. And so we think that in this day and age that probably there's a better way to explain the components of that student report. So part of redesigning that student report is also exploring an interactive interpretive guide. So that's on our wish list to do as well. We offer an OLPA test, which stands for Optional Local Purpose Assessment. And so Minnesota does provide this assessment to districts. It's approximately early October to mid-February is the testing window. And so districts have the opportunity to use that assessment. But we want to look for ways that we can provide additional information to inform instruction, because that's when it matters, and so those tests are aligned to Minnesota academic standards. They are using the MCA scale, and so we're looking for ways to improve those support materials for districts. Something that other assessments provide, for example, NAEP, the National Assessment for Educational Progress, provides sample items at score points. So, for example, we provide a scale score, but what does that scale score mean? We provide some amount of information as far as, well, this means you're in partially meets or in meets, you're in a particular achievement level. But again, what what content does that really mean? And so one of the things that we want to look at is providing sample items at different score points, at the meats cut, in the middle of the meats cut, at the partially meats cut, to help parents interpret those scores and to help educators. And then something that we're, as part of all of this, that we're exploring is a parent portal. So thinking about, using technology to the best of our benefit. Are printed reports the most appropriate anymore? That's where the conversation is. We'd like to ask that of the focus group, and depending upon that, then explore a parent portal. So there's a lot of feedback and a lot of conversations that we have to have to get it, everything in place for the 15-16 school year. But those are conversations that we would like to have. So the other demonstration that Pearson is going to give is about online administration. And so just a little bit of background. The MCAs were originally, for math and reading, were originally administered on paper. And math was administered on paper until 2011. Beginning in 2011, we offered the assessment in paper and online. And so one of the questions that was asked before the for us to prepare was, what does that transition from paper to online look like? And so we did conduct comparability studies. It did provide us the ability to have new item types, so not just multiple choice. We now have the opportunity to target questions at higher cognitive levels and really get at those problem-solving skills with the technology-enhanced items, and Pearson's going to demo some of those. And then, obviously, is the reformatting piece, which was not a small undertaking, to take those items from static PDFs to getting them in an online environment. One piece as well, so that gets us to online, but then the legislation requires that we're administering the MCAs in 3-7 in adaptive, starting in 16. And so that requires a very large item pool. And so we are meeting that requirement already for math in grades 3-7. Actually, grades 3-8 math have been adaptive since 2012. But we have to have, large is probably not the best word there. We have to have gargantuan item banks.
Gargantuan's good.
just for the sake of comparison, for a student takes 42 items, and we have approximately 800 items in a grade level to administer that adaptive test of 42 items for a student. The advantages of adaptive testing are that we are able to shorten the test. So that was so a paper test was longer because all of the students took exactly the same questions. It was a static fixed form. An adaptive test is creating the test as the student takes it, and it's customizing it based on their responses. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to shorten the length of the test and get a more accurate statistical measure of a student's ability level as a result of that adaptive test. So from our standpoint, it requires a lot of items. From the student standpoint, it shortens the test, and we've got a more accurate measure. So there are advantages, but that is part of the reason that we are not adaptive in reading right now, is because that passage pool has to be very, very large and very robust. And the reading assessment did not become operational and aligned to these standards until 2013. So we don't have the amount of time administering aligned to these standards that we do for math. And a lot of what Jennifer is going to talk about is the transition from online to mobile devices. So we've been online for science. We've been online since 2007. Mm-hmm. for math since 2011 and for reading from 2013. Now we need to support testing on a mobile device, on a tablet. So what does that mean? What challenges are there? What do we need to consider as we move forward? As you might imagine, we have to reformat everything because the text interacts differently on a computer screen than it does on a touchpad device or touchscreen device. For example, those technology enhanced items, right now they're all set to the sensitivity of a mouse, which is much smaller than the sensitivity of your finger. Mm-hmm. And so we have to reformat everything when they're dragging or dropping or clicking on a drop down. We've got to reformat those to be to the sensitivity of a finger, not to the sensitivity of a mouse. So that's going to take us some time. And also, we are beginning to accept that we might lose some passages and we might lose some items in this transition. We might find out, as a result of the pilot study, that some items just are not able to be administered on a tablet, or some passages may not be able to be administered on a tablet. So Jennifer's going to show you wrapping and with a passage, and a piece that really concerns us with is poems, where from a literary standpoint,
the format.
You've got a poem and that's a literary device, and now it's going to wrap, and now you lose that formatting and that meaning. And so does that mean that students can interact with the poem in a meaningful way? That's why we have to do the pilot study. So in April, we'll be out in districts with Minnesota students interacting with Minnesota items, getting their feedback, student feedback on what's most appropriate to inform us moving forward. And so that's really important to me. I don't want to take a tablet study from another state and say, this is fine. I want to be sure that it's Minnesota students interacting with Minnesota items telling us that it's okay to move forward. So that's the end of my presentation, and then Pearson is going to do some demos.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dugan. I think, members, you realize just how much work and time and effort goes into designing this system that we have actually requested of our Department of Education through legislation. And there are some questions, but first, before we go to the questions, Representative Ward, would you be willing to move the minutes from January 27th?
Madam Chair, thank you. I would move the minutes from January
Representative 27th. Ward moves the minutes from January 27th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the minutes have been approved. We have some questions, Ms. Dugan, so please stay in place. My question first is there a pretest for every one of the 3 through 8 reading and math tests that districts probably administer, and to what extent do you know whether or not they administer those? Ms. Dugan.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. So by pretest, I will assume that you mean the OPA assessment?
Yes, the OPA or something similar to it.
Sure. So for we have the optional local purpose assessment, OPA, available for math grades 3 through 8. That assessment is adaptive, and students have up to 2 opportunities. So again, that's why the window is so large, is that they could choose to offer it in the fall and again in late January, early February, before the spring test. So in math, it's only available in 3 through 8 with 2 administrations. In reading, there is 1 administration available to students, and that is in all grades, 3 through 8 and 10. Again, we just didn't have the item pool. We have the legislative requirement to go adaptive, and so until we're adaptive and we know we can go adaptive, we can't give up any more of our item bank to have a second reading administration until we're sure that we can carry through with the adaptive piece.
So, Ms. Dugan, do you know to what extent districts take advantage of that?
Thank you. I don't. We could get that data. I can tell you this. OPAL was one of the pieces that was included in that additional survey, so we could aggregate from there. And I don't remember off the top of my head how many of those 254 districts administered OPA, but we could get that information.
So members, you know, just looking at the slide that's in front of us tells us why school calendars have repeated designations for testing. Because in my districts, if the map is used or it's the OPA, those are listed on the school calendar. So when you look at the school calendar, you begin to wonder if there ever is a learning day because there's so much reference to testing. So I think, you know, we have to realize that this availability is something districts have bought into and are using for their students. So when we talk about too much testing, it's the availability, but it's way beyond what is required by the legislature and by the federal government. Let's move to questions from other members. Representative Yabusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When do parents get the results?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. It depends. So there is an on-demand in within Pearson's system. I just passed it, sorry. In the reporting system. In the on-demand reporting system, there is a report that districts could print out and provide to parents or talk through during a parent-teacher night. So there is that possibility. If they don't utilize that and they wait for, and many do, if they wait for the student reports to be mailed this year, those will arrive in districts August 3rd. So different districts approach it very differently.
Representative Urso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is something I'd really like to see addressed better from the parents' point of view, because if I've got a student who's lagging in any way, I would be making decisions about summer school opportunities, tutoring opportunities, maybe even changing schools, depending on the situation. And to have that information at the beginning of the summer would be quite a lot more valuable than getting it in August. By August, you're about ready to start school again, and it's too late to address any deficits before school's going to start up. The data exists, and I think we ought to really make that a priority, that we figure out how to get that information in the hands of parents much, 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 much sooner than we are. As well as your slide was page 15 that I had. Well, you're right there. When we're explaining data to parents, because we're going to start including this off-grade level information, which is wonderful, that we help parents understand the longitudinal data on that from year to year, so that they can compare that off-grade level, if it's appropriate for their student, be able to compare that off-grade information from year to year. Because previous to this, when we didn't have the off-grade information, all you knew if your kid was away from the norm, all you knew was they were still behind or they were still ahead, but you didn't know if they had made real gains. This gives us the opportunity. It's the next page, 16. Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
That's all one long question.
Yep. Because we've got the ability to start modifying some of the questions with the technology available, are we working toward reducing the dependence on reading skills for the math test and the science test?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So, the reporting piece, I could not agree with you more. And that is absolutely what we're trying to get at with the focus groups. We really want to hear from parents. We want to hear from districts. How are they using the services that we are providing? How are they using them? How can they be improved? How can we get information to the districts sooner? How can we get information to the parents sooner? And really exploring that parent portal is something that's very important to us. And so those focus groups to give us feedback is going to be critical in how we move forward with that. As far as the administration mode and the reading portion of perspective of the math and science test, that and I apologize because now it's just second nature to me that it's an advantage. But a huge portion of one of the advantages of moving to online is that we can provide text to speech. And we do provide text-to-speech as a universal design component in all of our assessments for math and science. So a student has access to text-to-speech or accommodated text-to-speech. So if a student is visually impaired or is an English learner and that accommodated text-to-speech is more appropriate, the accommodated text-to-speech reads a graphic and the regular text-to-speech does not. And so that's something that is available and does not take the student out of a testing session with their peers, whereas when it was on paper and they were administered a script, for example, and read the math test or the science test, then they were taken out of a testing session with their peers. And so that's a huge advantage of being able to be online. We've learned a lot about universal design, and so just really making sure that we're looking at every single test question and making sure that even though text-to-speech is available to those students, that we're not assessing reading on the math test. Making sure that if there's context there, that it's meaningful context and it has a purpose of being there, and it's a problem-solving context rather than and getting at those higher-order thinking skills and preparing them for career in college rather than context for the sake of saying that we have context. So that's something that begins very early on in our item development phases.
Thank you, Ms. Dugan. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Dugan, thank you for your presentation. I just had a couple of quick questions, hopefully quick anyway. On page 9, you were discussing about the changes to the MCAs in grades 3 through 7 and then 3 through 8. And I was just wondering, because I've heard that the Explorer and the Plan are going to be discontinued by Pearson, if that's, sorry, I can't see you, if that's in response to that at all, or, you know, what's going to be the outcome of changing and not having the Explorer and Plan, if you could expound on that.
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So the two are actually separate. The legislation requires that in grades 3 through 7 we include that off-grade level testing. And actually the legislation, I should modify my slide probably a little bit. The legislation requires that on-track indication only for grades 3. The legislation only requires it for 3 through 7. We've been requested to include it, and so we plan to include it on 8 and 10 as well for the MCAs. So the legislation only requires 3 through 7, and I think proceed very lightly in interpreting the intent of the legislation, which was that the MCAs would provide information to those grades 8 and 10 assessments. So the two are separate. That the legislation is really looking at 3 through 7, but we can for on track pieces we can provide that to 8 and 10 as well, and we plan to do that. And yes, Explore and Plan, ACT is eliminating Explore and Plan, and they have allowed us to administer it one more year. And so that is an option. We have not made a final decision or signed a final contract yet for the 15-16 school year, but we have been told that Explore and Plan will 15-16 would be the last year that the Explore plan would be an option to administer in Minnesota.
Ms. Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the explanation, and I think that's something for us to consider because that was just approved about 2 years ago now. And as we're looking at all of these, how that might affect assessments going forward, which brings me to my other question, the advisory committees on page 10. I was just wondering, how often do all five of those groups meet together and compare notes as opposed to being isolated groups?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. They don't meet as one entity. There are some individuals that overlap. So, for example, there's an individual that is on the accommodations committee that is also on the assessment advisory committee. There's several folks that are on the local assessment and accountability advisory committee that are also on the technology work group. So they don't meet as a whole group, but there's definitely overlap.
And Ms. Dugan, do you not have an employee at the department on your staff or associated with your staff who also is present to provide communication among your staff?
Oh, absolutely. All of the leadership team is what we call them of the division attend all of those meetings. So from the Division of Statewide Testing, we're following through and following up and asking questions as well.
You get lots of feedback. I know that because I've been on some of these. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Dugan. I was just curious if it's possible to align the NWEA to state standards.
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. The NWEA is an off-the-shelf product. We would need to go out for bid if we were going. We would have to release a different RFP, and then they would have to, and part of that agreement would have to be that they would have to develop their questions specifically aligned to Minnesota standards. And so I can't speak to the feasibility of that. I can speak to when we released an RFP in 2013, NWEA did not bid.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a couple of quick questions, Ms. Dugan. Many of the districts do other testing beyond the MCAs. Why?
Ms. Dugan.
Well, thank you. I can only speculate. So I've alluded to, I think one of the big pieces that they've talked about, for example, with NWEA, is that NWEA does not change their assessment. As Minnesota has to align our assessment to Minnesota's academic standards. So when we have a standards revision and the assessment changes, we can't compare, we lose trend data, because we can't compare from previous versions. With NWEA, they have that longitudinal data because they're developing it such that they can continue that trend line. And so that's been one piece that has been stated in the test reduction work group of why they're giving NWEA is because it does provide that trend data. I think, honestly, I think some of the reports that are provided with some of those other assessments are seen as more immediate and more meaningful. And again, that's one of those pieces that that's part of what we're working on with the reporting piece is to make the MCA reports more pertinent to instruction and more informative.
Madam Chair, just one last question. I love parent portals, much to my children's dismay.
I bet.
That was last night at our house. Why don't you have this assignment in? But to me, the value is the real-time data. You know, we're in Minneapolis. We're, I think, 7 days into the second or third quarter of the year. Assignment's not in. Grade stinks. I know that's a, you know, statistical aberration, but why isn't the assignment in? Let's get it done. Boom. Principals refer to the MCAs as the academic autopsy. And as a parent, when I can get my kids' test results 4, 5, or 6 months after they've taken the test, what's the value in providing a parent portal and going to the expense of developing one when the reports aren't immediate or meaningful in your terminology?
Ms. Dugan.
If we were to develop the parent portal that I have envisioned,
mm-hmm.
They would not be that delayed. It would be electronic. So it would be at, you know, looking at this year's schedule, it would be, we'll say, June 15th, after the district had the ability to finalize their data elements that will be used for accountability purposes. So it would be early in the summer.
If I can just ask one clarifying question.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be done here. The finalizing the data elements, is that about my kid's performance, or is that about aggregating to the school performance? Because if it's only about aggregating to the school performance, why can't I get data on my kid the same day they take the test?
Ms. Duke?
Like I can on NWEA.
So the district could provide that to you. Right now, your student takes it on March 10th. They, within an hour of them submitting their test, they have the opportunity to print out a report and provide out of Pearson's on-demand system and provide that. They have that option. Some districts choose not to do that, and that's their
local decision.
That's their local decision. That's their option. The finalizing the data elements, it has nothing to do with a student's score. They do not know a student's score when they're in there. They just know that there is a test record for that student. So they're looking at every student that took a test, every student has a test record, and do I need to code any of them in a special way, which does feed into the aggregate. And so I think, again, my mind goes to using the final piece because I wouldn't want to confuse a parent with giving them two pieces of information, but we're open to that conversation in the focus groups of getting the feedback that this should be a real time or at least, you know, loaded every week out of Pearson's system. We're open to having that conversation. My mind goes to only providing it once. But the parents may have a different viewpoint, and that's the value of those focus groups and having those conversations.
One last quick short question. How many districts in the state provide real-time access to parents on the MCAs?
Ms. Dugan.
Within a week of the child taking the test.
I don't have that information.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My colleagues are all very intelligent, and they've asked my questions.
Oh, thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this one working now?
Let's use the other one.
Well, we started out with this one.
That one isn't working.
No,
that
dear,
one.
Dear.
Let's try this. Is that any better at all?
I think that's better.
All right. Sorry.
Thank you. We did ask them to check this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, a little perhaps elementary question. I'm just concerned about process and the timelines. Could you just walk us through very quickly what's happening between June 12th, June 24th, and August 3rd? And do districts really need the paper reports? What are they waiting for? Because they have the information. And then how are they using it? That seems to be a big deadline. So what's the train of thought there?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. June 12th, we have everything that's final. On June 24th, there are individual student reports available It takes us a while to aggregate all of that data and look at it and make sure that we have all the student groups added correctly and that we've got it all aggregated correctly. July 28th, that information gets loaded into the data center. And so then July 29th, once we've finalized and we're sure we've got the state comparison, the district comparison all calculated correctly, because June 24th is just, these are individual student scores. We want to make sure that all of our math is adding up correctly as we go forward. So it takes us about a month to make sure that we've got all of that done, calculated, and then provided to Pearson. And those student reports are actually available electronically on July 29th this year. Then from July 29th to August 3rd is when they get printed, packaged, shipped, and arrive in districts. And that is one of the things that we're going to take to the districts is July 29th the conversation. Could they load the PDF to their parent portal, or we load it to ours, and students are getting the electronic report instead of a piece of paper? So what's most appropriate? But we need to have those conversations. I think it was probably, I want to say it was 2009-ish. There was a conversation that we had about, well, we're going to eliminate the state providing printed reports and go to just providing the electronic PDF to districts, and then they would have to print if they wanted to print. And there was a very large reaction that's not appropriate. The state should continue providing paper reports. So I think it's time to circle back around on that conversation and see where we are.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, thank you. I'm still a little puzzled why it sounds like after all the electronic pieces are done that there's a lot of manual sorting and checking, and that I know you have a lot of students, a lot of schools, a lot of districts to deal with, but it still seems to me like you've got the information electronically weeks before there's an aggregate report. That seems to me like is that just not programmed to do that? Or are you still hand sorting it? It just seems like it's taking a long time.
Thank you. Ms. Duke, isn't some of that for the purposes of our multiple rating system as well, that you have to collect that data and insert it into the proper portal that you have? Yes. Ms. Duke, answer the other question, please.
Yes. The short answer is no, we are not doing it all by hand and sorting stacks by hand, no. Currently, the student reports have that aggregate information and comparison of state and district to an individual student's performance. So it's individuals, it's not just providing the student's results, which we do have the student reports on June 24th, but we have to provide the aggregate school, aggregate district, and aggregate state information on that printed report. So we have to make sure that we have those calculations right before we can create that student report. So it is, and we're always looking for ways that we can improve the timelines. I'm just giving you the dates of what they are this year.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Dugan. And comments I'm going to make are not meant to imply anything particularly about you. You're doing your job. But, I'm frankly concerned about the testing frenzy in this state. I'm concerned that it detracts from learning in the classroom. When I was a teacher, imparting knowledge was the most important thing I felt that I had to do. And,
did you ever test, Representative Erdahl?
Yes, I did. But frankly, I believe that my test was part of learning. When I tested, I allowed them to use their notes on the test, and occasionally I would just give them the test again a week later, mm-hmm. and they did just as well or better as they did before. I mean, the test to me was just an instrument in learning. We do need to test, but I think, again, we're doing more than we need to do. And therefore, my question, which actually I was getting to, was the reduction advisory group, when are they going to report?
Ms. Dugan.
We are working on finalizing that report, and that will be available on the website, and we'd be glad to come back and present on and do a follow-up conversation about the recommendations out of that committee.
Thank you.
I think we're going to be hearing that February 10th in joint session with the, potentially, with the Senate, and we will probably not meet in this room, perhaps another room, but Senator Wicker and I have tried to arrange a combined meeting so we can hear some of these reports in one fell swoop, but we hope that it might be ready by then so we can include it. Thank you,
Madam Chair. Just real quick.
Sure. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. And Ms. Dugan, I sincerely hope that the testing reduction advisory group is going to propose a reduction.
Representative Urusso, did you have a follow-up way back when?
I believe Representative Davitt.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Dugan. I just say thank you so much for all the work that you're doing, because you're doing it because the legislature has asked you to. And we as legislators need to think about when we discuss testing and testing reduction, we have only ourselves to point to for some of what we've heard today. So with that, we'll bring forth Pearson. And they're going to update us on what we can expect when testing rolls around in a very short period of time. They're going to show us the latest. Welcome to our committee. And once you're ready, and make sure you have microphones in front of you when you're responding or presenting. And are you going to start, Jennifer?
Or I'm actually going to start.
Okay. So please introduce yourselves. Why don't you all introduce yourselves, and then we'll go back to you, and you'll begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Carol Everson, and I am the Vice President with Pearson over the State Services. So my role is to oversee the Minnesota program, and I'll let Amanda and Jennifer introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Amanda Fitzgerald. I'm a program manager with Pearson. I work solely on the Minnesota assessment program, working with MDE to deliver the assessments with our contract with Pearson.
My name is Jennifer Riley, and I am a program manager as well who supports solely the Minnesota program.
Thank you very much. And Amanda, then you'll begin.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me okay?
Move a little closer.
Okay, I'm going to...
And Pages, will you check to make sure the microphones are pulled out as far as they can be from their stations? Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, good morning. So I'm going to show you very briefly our Minnesota Pearson Access site. This is the administrative portal that is used for all pretests, during testing, and then actually post-testing activities. So it's a single sign-on for districts to access all things related to testing and also where they would go then to receive student results. And this is actually, it's a role-based system. So depending on the role that you have been assigned, you're going to see different things as you log in. I'm going to log in as a district administrative coordinator. We call them a DAC. That's going to give us pretty much the largest view. Those folks have the largest view into the system. But we have roles like for a test monitor or a teacher that are much more condensed, and they see less information, only critical to the role that they are performing. So give me just one second here. There we go. So you can see we have tabs across the top, and this is where district and teachers would access the different roles. We're going to jump right over here, in the interest of the time, to the test results tab. This is where you can go to access those different reporting systems that Jennifer was talking about earlier. So we have on-demand reports. This is where districts can access those preliminary results that are available within 1 hour of the student submitting an online test. Published reports, these are those final PDF reports at the end of the window, when Jennifer was mentioning the July 29th date for when those reports are available. That's available in published reports. This is also where the benchmark reports that she was mentioning for MCA Science, that's where these are available. And then the longitudinal reporting system, which has the analytical tools so that districts can have a chance to slice and dice and aggregate and disaggregate their data as they choose. So we'll take a look at the on-demand reports first. So right now, just so you guys are aware, I'm logged into a control district. This is a Pearson control district. So none of the data that we're looking at today is real student data, but this is the live production site. So this is exactly what the districts are interacting with today. So you'll see here, you can go to on-demand reports, and there's actually two different ways that they can access results in on-demand reports. So the first one is a grouping of students by grade and subject. And so this is a grouping that basically we do of the students as we receive the file and we group them by grade and subject. There's also the rostered classes tab. And this is where districts can upload a roster of students, any grouping of students they choose. If they want to upload, you know, all of their students who are on the basketball team, for instance, or if they want to, you know, look at only their students that are, you know, participating in an honors system or whatever they choose, they can group the students in these rostered classes and then have a chance to look at them in that group as well. If we click on one of these grades and subjects, it's going to bring us actually right into the report. So there's two reports available in on-demand reporting. This report's called our session list report. It's a roster report. It's provides some demographic information about the students within this group. You know, their name, their MARS ID, and then if we scroll over here, you can see that it will also provide them with scale score information, an achievement level, a learning locator code, which can actually be used with our Pearson Perspective site to access enrichment and remediation that's targeted to that student's performance on the assessment, and then some very high-level reporting strand information. This report can be exported to Excel. So if you have a very large you know, group of students in here and you want to export it to Excel in order to be able to save it or to do sorting later, that's available. And then you can also access this session list report as a PDF roster that can be distributed to your superintendent or other folks within your district. We also then have the student detail reports. This is what we were referring to as the on-demand ISR when Jennifer was talking with you earlier. And actually, to access that, you can just select the student's name within the roster report, and it's going to download a PDF of that. This report is not identical to the final report that they're going to receive in the mail, but it's very similar and has many of the same elements. So we have demographic information at the top. You'll see here that there's sort of a graphical representation of their performance and their achievement level. And I do have to apologize. Like I said, we're working in a control district, and unfortunately, a lot of these tests that we were submitting were taken very quickly, so you'll see some rather low scores. So I do apologize for the does not meet scores you're seeing. And then you'll also see down here where we have the reporting strand information so that districts can, you know, really see at the strand level the student's performance in a graphical representation. And then lastly, I did want to point out that this report also does provide that learning locator number. This is the report that districts can choose to print and send home to parents, and parents have access to that Pearson Perspective site, so they can go and type in this learning locator code at home to access those enrichment materials for their student. Okay. So then we'll move over and actually look at the longitudinal reporting system and some of the options that are available there. So again, same location under the test results tab, you can click on longitudinal reports. And it brings you to a dashboard, for lack of a better term, at the beginning. And you'll see here that we have longitudinal reports available for all of the different assessments that that are currently being offered or that were offered in the past. So we have our MCA reports, MTAS reports, OLPA, and then actually the MCA modified, which we're currently not administering, but we do have historical information available there within the MCA modified. And then down here at the bottom of the dashboard is sort of a little cheat table, if you will, that kind of tells districts at a quick glance what historical information is available here for each of the reports. So you can see for MCA and MTAS, we have reading and mathematics data that's been loaded all the way back to the 2010-2011 school year. For science, it goes back as far as 2011-2012. If we look at OLPA, that we just have this current year's data of OLPA available. To actually dig into the longitudinal system, you'll click on the reports that you're looking at. And it's going to then bump up against a very large database of data to bring up your information. So there's tabs along the top, and these offer different different analyses, different reports, all hitting against the same data. So it's all the district's data or the school's data or the teacher's data, depending on how you've logged into and what information you have access to within this system. Over here on the left-hand side, you can make selections to kind of start to drill down into your data. So you can select a grade, a student group of data if you want to, and it will highlight that in green if you want to only look at your third grade students, if you only want to look at your third grade male students, and it's going to change automatically the information that you're looking at. This at a glance tab, and I hope you guys can see this okay, it's a little shortened on my screen. Over here, it's going to show you what those current selections are, which is kind of nice, I think, as districts start drilling in, they might forget, oh wait, what cohort of students have I drilled down to? So it always provides the information over here of exactly what selections you've made. You get some quick graphical representations, you know, of performance by subject and achievement levels. The at-a-glance information that you see on the first tab is very high level, right? It's meant to just provide a quick snapshot of sort of your district or your school's performance and doesn't go into as much detail as we'll see on some of the other tabs. To clear selections, which I'm going to do here, you can just select the eraser icon next to the selections. So if we move into the score analysis tab, there's actually two different reports, roster reports that are available in here. You've got a performance by subject and then a strand report, and you can toggle between these two reports based on the selections you've made. Any made on the first screen too would carry over here as you move throughout the tabs. So again, we could look at our grade five students and see, you know, their achievement level, the number of students, and the percentage of students within each of those achievement levels. All of the student group information here can be cycled through on this report. So right now we're looking at it divided by gender, but we can select, we can click here and switch to ethnicity. We can select again and go and look at your English language learner students. So any of that demographic information that we have in the database, you can sort of cycle through that and look at those different cohorts of students in the longitudinal system. If you want to switch over to your strand, performance by strand report, double click, and it's going to change the report. So now you're looking at those individual reporting strands by subject and the number of students and the percentage of students, again, that are falling into different performance categories. As we continue our way across the tabs, you're going to have, you know, even some more options. So we're going to get into our performance analysis, where you've got a test results report, a school year report, and an organization report. Again, all of our selections have remained, but if we decide we want to clear those to kind of pull back again, we can move back on those. This offers you a lot of more opportunities, you know, to cycle through the different options that we have available. School year report is interesting. This is actually going to show you the school or district that you're looking at for that school year. In a graphical quick representation, what the performance of your students are. And then we have the organization report, which allows you to actually compare schools within your district. So right now we have two schools here, so you can compare the public school Fitzgerald to the public school Riley. And then as Jennifer had mentioned, you're actually able to get all the way down to a single student, student's result in this. And so we have a student roster here, and this looks similar to the roster we were looking at in on-demand reporting. It brings up a list of all of the students here, and you can actually select an individual student from the list and view their results. I should have mentioned earlier, but all of these reports that we've been looking at have the availability to be printed and also exported to Excel. So we have icons up here at the top on all these reports so that you can access those. And then the last tab over here is our search by student. So this is if you are coming into the system and you know specifically that you had a parent call and you want to go out here and look at a specific student's result and get your hands on that information very quickly, you can actually go here and type that student's MARS ID into the system, and it'll allow you very quickly to pull up that student and find their results. We have, you know, how-to information available within the system to provide some assistance to districts. We also have online recorded trainings for the system and a user's guide available on our Pearson Access site to try and help people navigate the system and understand the data that they're looking at. Okay.
I think I'm going to ask, are there questions for Ms. Fitzgerald on her presentation? Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that parents can access the data. When and how and from whom do they obtain whatever login information they need for that?
Ms. Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. So currently, the system is not available for parents to log in and access the information electronically themselves. We do have logins for district users, school users, and then all the way down to the individual teacher. So in order for a parent to get the results, the district or the teacher would need to actually log in. They need to download the PDF reports or the Excel reports and then provide those to the parents.
Representative Urusso?
That's consistent with what we heard before, but when you were showing us the screen, there was a point at which you said parents could get this information. So you didn't actually mean at that point that parents could do that.
Fitzgerald, I apologize. So I apologize for the confusion. No, it's certainly set up that a district has options to download the data out of the system and make it available to parents.
Representative Russo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when I was following, it seemed like the, correct me if I'm wrong, basically, if I've misunderstood, it seemed like the options for districts to be able to get that information to parents would be either to print out paper for everybody, to manually download PDFs for everybody and then upload them to their system, or to download an Excel spreadsheet and go through their own programming to get that uploaded electronically. Is that true?
Ms. Fitzgerald.
Thank you.
Ms. Iverson.
Sorry. What I wanted to do was to talk about what we're looking at doing in the future. So right now, that's correct. That's the opportunities we have right now. We have had some districts ask of the ability to be able to download this and put it out through their student information system. We'll be working that with MDE and Jennifer's group during the focus groups. But the other thing we need to become familiar with is what type of file structure a district would need and the different file structures they might need for various student information systems.
Representative Urso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's the comment for the future. It seems to me that we could provide the ability for parents to be able to log in and see their own information directly and not leave it up to the districts to be gatekeepers for that information for their kids. Since the information does exist for the students and every student has a MARS ID number for that, that we should explore that possibility somehow. Thank you.
A reaction to that comment from any one of you? Ms.
Yes,
Iverson.
That is one of the things we're looking at with the parent portal. And I agree with you. I think we need to get the information directly to parents. There are some things we need to work through, such as how we identify the parent that has access to that. So those are just things we have to work through. It's been done in some other states. We just need to work that through with Minnesota.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you talked about being able to do school comparisons. What demographic information can I access to assure that I'm actually doing an apples-to-apples comparison of schools?
Ms. Fitzgerald.
That's a really good question, actually. So right now, what is available here in our longitudinal reporting system is that comparison report that I showed you. And that, unfortunately, at this point, is not going to allow you to probably do that sort of comparison that you're looking at as far as making sure that the schools that you're comparing have the similar demographic information. What it's really going to do is, if you're at a district level, which is what we're looking at right now, it's going to show you all of the organizations, all of your schools that are underneath of that district. So it's sort of, again, role-based, and if you're at the district level, you can see all of your schools within a district, but it's not going to allow you, for instance, to say, okay, there's a neighboring district who has similar demographic information to me, and I'm going to do a compare with that. I think that's where some of the benchmark reports that the state is working to provide starts to provide some of that information. And also, we're looking to roll out in the future a comparison of achievement reports that will allow you to look at how your organization compares to the other, like, schools within a district and then also districts to the state. So that should give you a little bit more information with actually the different ethnicities to make sure that you are making an apples-to-apples comparison.
Representative Daphne?
Madam Chair, as you envision that in the future, will that include the demographic information? I was unclear on that.
Yes. Perhaps so Ms. Dugan can add to that, too.
Oh, my.
That comparison of looking at different districts and comparing that, I would recommend that they would do that off of MDE's data center, off of the public data site, mm-hmm. Because that information has the results and it also has the demographics. And so they can find a district that is either geographically close to them, they can search by district, they can search by school, and they have that information there on the public website. So I think, again, different tools are providing different perspectives and different uses.
One last quick question, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Daphne.
When you break out data on the student composition of a school, I'm trying to move away from the demographics term per se, do you include the percentage of students classified as homeless and homeless or highly mobile under the McKinney-Vento Act? Because every school should be having that data. And that's certainly, research shows, certainly meaningful to student performance. Mm-hmm. And if we're trying to do apples to apples, let's have the data to do that.
I'll get back to you on the specifics. From my recollection, that is not a student group that can be specifically selected on that public site. But let me check, and I don't know if that's a if in the student makeup that that's something that we report out publicly. It may be one of those pieces that, due to student counts, wouldn't be available on that public site. But let me check on that. I know that special education status, for example, it is one of the student groups that they could sort by. So there are student groups that they can on that public on the data center get down to a more specific targeted comparison.
I guess, Madam Chair, and thank you. You're a strong proponent of school choice,
yes.
And fundamentally that requires good data. If I'm going to choose school A versus school B, I need to know that I'm making a comparison that's valuable. If we're not providing families with actionable data that we know matters in school performance, we're not providing parents with the data they need to make intelligent database decisions. And if we're missing the homeless and highly mobile kids, data that's publicly available that I can find on the MinnPost website for every school in Minneapolis, charter and traditional public, my question would be why. And you know, we should have a conversation about providing the public with the data they need to understand school performance and parents the data they need to make knowledgeable decisions. Thank you.
Thank you for that input, Representative Dabney, and I'm sure it's well taken by the department. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question actually goes back to Representative Yaruso's question, which was part of my question, but I wanted to dig down. And first of all, I do agree with her comments that we need to make it more accessible to parents, and hoping that we can get to that point. And part of my question was the enrichment materials that you mentioned that you said that parents could get those enrichment materials, and if they don't have access to the website, how do they get those materials? Do they have to contact the teacher? How would they even know that they need the enrichment materials? And then I'll have a few other questions.
Ms. Fitzgerald?
Yes, thank you. So we have the site that I showed you, the administrative portal, and I was trying to explain that this is at all pre-test and post-test activities. The public site that we actually have available for enrichment materials is actually outside of Pearson Access. It's called Pearson Perspective, and that is a site that is accessible by the public, by teachers, by parents. And if you have more specific questions on Pearson Perspective, I will turn it over to my colleague Jennifer Riley. But so the we try and tie the reports with the remediation tools that are available in Pearson Perspective. So the learning locator code that is available on the student detail report, and I can navigate to that again, is based off of the student's strand performance. Mm-hmm. And that code, when provided to a student or to a parent from the district by pulling that information out of Pearson Access, they can then access that open public site, put in the learning locator code, and access those remediation materials.
Ms. Riley, would you like to say more about that?
Sure, thank you. The MN.perspective site is also accessible by teachers. Teachers can create an account and log in, and they get the information about their students. But for parents, it's not just a learning locator that they can access once they have their results. The remediation tools and the enrichment tools are available to the site, and it's open to teachers and parents at any time. And so it's wide open, and the teachers can create the account. We provide trainings for that, posted on our open site, and we also provide trainings at the assessment conference as well. And I think we also mentioned that we'd be happy to come back and present Perspective to you as well.
Thank you very much. Representative Wills?
Just a quick follow-up. thank you for the explanation, and I apologize if I misunderstood that. It does seem like a little bit of a convoluted process to get to the information, and if there's ways to make that more efficient. But I did have a question as far as the training for the teachers and how much they utilize this information. Is the training required or optional, and how many teachers actually go in and use this information to inform their instruction?
Ms. Fitzgerald.
Thank you. So currently, all of the trainings that we have available are optional. So they're not required by the Department of Ed, with the exception of a test monitor training that is required for all before tests can be administered by a test monitor. That being said, we try and make these trainings as available to districts, schools, teachers as possible. We hold webinars that are open and available. We try and do a train-the-trainer approach as well, so that we can provide training to a district assessment coordinator, and then they can then pass that along and provide training to other folks within their district or school. They also welcome to, you know, bring those people. We also record those trainings, so they're available on our Pearson Access site, open to anyone, so that they can access those trainings at their convenience. We do some quick start guides as well for the different, you know, services that are available in Pearson Access, so that folks, you know, can get the information that they are looking for quickly.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's been brought to my attention that the use of computers for classroom instruction is often lost due to testing. And I was wondering that because the platform, you know, the desktop, iPad, or whatever, on which the test is taken under the current model is limited, will the platform be improved? Will there be, and if so, when?
Ms. Iverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Yes, so, and Jennifer can speak to this as well. She spoke in her original presentation earlier about the pilot we're doing with tablets. That's going to be taking place in April.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we'll be better informed on which students. We don't want to disadvantage a student by having them taken on something that may cause them to have difficulties. As Jennifer explained, we're now going down to the finger instead of a mouse. We just need to do due diligence to make sure that that works. We will be, Jennifer Riley will be showing you our online platform, and we actually have some tablets with us so you can actually test them out yourself and see what a student might have to do.
And as briefly as possible, Ms. Dugan, so we can have the hands-on.
The answer is that these test scores are used in making accountability calculations, and we've got to be sure that we can stand behind those calculations. And so the department did have the option of supporting iPad usage this year.
Mm-hmm.
With Pearson's system does utilize the tablets. Our items were not in a place that we could provide that this school year. We couldn't get all of the items transitioned and also get to being adaptive all in the same year. And so we had to choose, and because the legislation requires that we're adaptive, we had to mm-hmm. ensure that we could field test enough items this year to get to that adaptive piece. And so we did announce in August at the assessment conference, in August of 14, we announced that the 15-16 school year we would be supporting tablets after we went through this tablet study.
So let's move to a demonstration.
Okay.
As Jennifer stated, we are currently testing students. Can you hear me okay?
Is this better? We're currently testing students on a platform that we call TestNav, and the current version is on 7.5. And students are able to test on traditional computers. There is one option for Chromebooks that requires an extra step of virtualization, and we've made that available to Minnesota districts and have provided information for them if they should be interested in that. But for the 15-16 year, we are moving to TestNav 8, which allows students and provides options for publishing and scoring tests on mobile devices, on tablets, a wide range of tablets. We happen to have iPads here today, but we also support Androids and other tablets, Windows tablets as well, just to make that very clear. And then in for TestNav 8 for 15-16, we also support Chromebooks without the need for an extra step of virtualization. So I just want to make that really clear. So let me log in one moment. For those of you who received a tablet, you have the same test that I am pulling up right now. So you'll see that there's four sections in this test. So if you're sharing and passing around the test, when you get to continue and move on, you can just hit yes, and it'll let you work through the test as you share with your colleagues. So this, the first section, as we discussed earlier, we provide text-to-speech on our math and science content to allow students to access the content without the need for reading. And I'll just walk through a few of our example items. I'm going to skip through and speak to some of the ones that Jennifer was referring to. So we have various tools within the system that are available to students. So if I'm a student who wants to, as I'm working through the test, I want to think about, I want to eliminate some
process
traces.
Process of elimination. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Just like when you were doing paper tests, you may be familiar with that. And then to select text-to-speech, I won't do it right now, but you would click this, the arrow here, mm-hmm. and then the student would, or the a voice would come on, mm-hmm. and you can control the speed of the voice. I just want to scroll through, and I want to share with you some of the information that Jennifer was speaking to earlier, Ms. Dugan was speaking to. As we move across platforms, and we're switching from a regular desktop computer to mobile devices, just like when you're on your iPhone versus a tablet, the way that you scroll and interact with the text is different. So when we move from the current testing platform to our new testing platform, our source code is on mobile-first design, and so that when our content is rendered across devices, that it wraps appropriately. Just like when you go to a website, it will ask you, do you want to go to the mobile site, or do you want to just stay on the traditional site? So the way that this is designed is for mobile-first, so that it interacts, and the scrolling and the wrapping of text, for example, wraps appropriately. So as an example of this, this also works on a computer. So if you have one of the tablets, if you pinch, you can zoom in on the text. And as Jennifer mentioned earlier, as I zoom in on the content, it will expand. I'll just share that with you in just one moment. So if you were looking at this particular passage on a device, as you expand, the A and the fiction, the line breaks would wrap differently. Okay. And I'm just watching our time. I know we're getting very close to the end of the time, so I'll go through this quickly. In addition, Jennifer also mentioned, she talked a little bit about bar graphs. And as we worked with students, we've done many cognitive labs with students as they've been working with different devices. Mm-hmm. And so we've, as we've reviewed how the items work with students, I hope you can see the shading okay. So when this item appeared with a clickable mouse, when students were taking it on a desktop, you could just see the little dot. But because students will be hovering and using their finger, mm-hmm. we have the little shading around the dot so the students can see exactly where they're putting that information. And similarly, as Jennifer mentioned, we have the same consideration for a bar graph. So as I'm dragging, it also tells you what my number is going to be, because as I'm dragging, my finger will be on top of the bar. So now we've added the small text to say, this is where your finger's landing. This is the information that we will collect once you deselect your finger. Okay. The other consideration for the tablet is we are, as Jennifer mentioned, we're loading Minnesota sample items, so the released items that you currently can see on the Pearson Access site. We're loading those to the our tablet for our tablet study that in April. And we want to hear back from students on the math, the science, and the reading. As you interact with these long passages and potentially paired passages, and as you interact with our science content, and Minnesota has some cutting-edge science assessments and scenarios and interactive items. As students interact with the content on the left, the science scenario, and then they go to answer the questions on the right, is the content on the left large enough for the students to see the scenario, see the data and the information within the scenario to be able to answer the questions? Those are the kinds of questions we're going to be asking students so that that can help inform us and make recommendations for what's appropriate to assess on a tablet and how small can we go. You know, we have recommendations and we've done studies at Pearson. There's iPad minis. People ask, can we assess on a phone? We get a lot of those questions, and so this helps. This will help inform that those decisions and recommendations for next year.
Representative Christensen, you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is: if you were taking a test on an iPad or some other tablet, does it does it is the autocorrect turned off on the tablet, because I was answering a question and it corrected it to a different. So I think that could, especially amongst, anybody, it could cause, an accidental wrong answer.
Thank
you, Ms. Riley.
Thank you, madam. Yes, that is a great question. And these are sample items. Just to clarify, the items that you're seeing, these are not Minnesota items. We're in the process of converting them for our samplers for April. And they're in we call that the rich text editor. We have the ability to turn the autocorrect off because that would give some advantage to students. For yeah. You've had a great start, yes.
Are there any other questions from members? So, Pearson, closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say we're very happy to be working with Minnesota. Minnesota's assessments are cutting edge, and so for us, working on this assessment is fun, not only educational for Minnesota, but it's fun to be working with a state that is looking at new and different ways of doing things and getting information down to the parent level.
And you are assuring us that everything will go well, regardless of the platforms in our districts. Ms. Iverson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We have been conducting many, many opportunities to work with districts and schools and to make sure that they are prepared for testing this spring, as well as prepared for testing during OPA. We've done site visits with several districts where we've actually gone out there and worked with their technologists. We've offered, as Amanda stated, webinars. We've had recordings. We are opening up what we call office hours, where districts can actually have set times. They can just call us, and we will set an appointment with them to make sure we have the right people. We are committed to making sure that every student tests and has a good experience in their testing.
Thank you very much. To Pearson, and a special thanks to the department, to Jennifer Dugan and her team, who have really presented us with a very detailed overview of assessments in Minnesota. With that said, this meeting is adjourned.